on the Mount of Transfiguration, Jesus goes up. He's showing the disciples, who are apparently not auditory learners, because he's been telling them that he's going to go to Jerusalem, he's going to be handed over, he's going to be crucified, and he's going to be raised on the third day. He's told them this claim clearly, but they don't get it. It's not entering in. So he decides, like any good teacher, that he's going to try a different way of showing. And so he's going to do visual learning. So, any visual learners in here? Right? Okay, so this is what Jesus is doing. I'm going to take you up with me, and I'm going to show you what I've been trying to tell you. And his clothes are transfigured. His face is brilliant. His clothes are transfigured in dazzling white, which is the clothes of the martyrs. This is what's going to happen to me. I also will be killed when I go to Jerusalem. This is what the shining clothes is all about. And with him comes Elisha and Moses. Now, this is great. This is like the elders, right? The oldest, in this culture, you know, the older you are, the more grounded you are, right? So you remember about, remember Simeon and Anna when Jesus was a child, right? So here's this brand new kid in the world. Here's his mom and dad who are, you know how new parents are. They're just not altogether grounded. And they have Anna and Simeon, older people, to ground them. Well, Elijah and Moses are like really old, right? These guys, they don't know. They don't not just know the story like Simeon and Anna does. They are the story, right? Moses goes into Egypt to set the Israelites free from Pharaoh. And the plagues come, the angel of death comes, and finally Moses brings the people out of Egypt and into the wilderness. He frees the people. God frees the people through Moses. Elijah, he's got his own stuff. He has this battle with the prophets of Baal. Remember that one where it's a contest, right? Whose God is stronger? Who's going to come and eat up the bull that's sacrificed to him? And of course, Elijah calls to God. God comes and does eats up the bull. And when Elijah wins the contest, he tells all of the people of Israel, "Now go and kill all the prophets of Baal." 400 prophets of Baal slaughtered. On another occasion, Ahab, the king, calls Elijah and says, he sends 50 soldiers to Elijah and says, "Come." The captain of the 50 says to Elijah, "Come, Ahab, the king, wants you." And Elijah says, "If I am a man of God, may God send fire and burn you all up." Boom! And it happens. Ahab sends another 50 with another captain. And they say, "Ahab, the king wants you." And Elijah says, "If I am a man of God, may God come and swallow you up in fire." Boom, it happens. Y'all know the story? Probably no. The third captain comes with his 50, and he comes on his knees and says, "Please, man of God, the king really would like to talk to you. Please don't burn us up." And Elijah says, "Okay, I'll go with you." All right. Now, here's Elijah, and here's Moses, and here's Jesus. And what does the voice from the cloud say to the disciples? "This is my son, the chosen. Listen to him." But it might not just be "listen to him." It might be "listen to him." He is going to be doing something different. You know the story of Moses. You know the story of Elijah. He is going to be doing something different. And that story that I told Aaron just now, where do you think they got the idea, James and John, that they should send fire down on that town? They got it from Elijah. And Jesus says, no, we're not doing that. And in fact, when Jesus is going to Jerusalem, he's not going to be going in like Moses to free the people by, plagues and all that stuff. He's going to go and he's going to hand himself over and let them do to him whatever they want. He's not going to attack them. It's a very different approach, right? So, listen to him. Follow him. So it is. So the glory of God shining in Jesus is no longer the glory of the power, the idea that God has all this power and is going to destroy our enemies. That's not what Jesus is up to. As it says, I did not come to destroy life, but to save. So listen to that. And try to get our minds, because Paul's talking about this veil that's lifted, right? But you know what? I think that the veil still tends to fall over our faces. When we start thinking that God is on our side and against our enemies, that's the veil. And oh, we still have that veil fall over our face, don't we? And the voice from heaven, the voice from the cloud says, listen to him. Follow him. And if we do that, him, Jesus, it becomes clear that Jesus is no longer the associated with the angel of death that comes to kill the Egyptians. Instead, he becomes associated with the Passover lamb that is killed and slaughtered. And every time we see someone who is slain, someone who is cast out, someone who is destroyed or being destroyed, that's where the glory of God is revealed. The one who hands himself over is the one who holds the glory of God. It's really hard to understand that the one who is suffering is the one who is reflecting the glory of God, not the powerful one over against whom the suffering one is, not the one inflicting the suffering, the one receiving the suffering. And it happens in so many ways. And it happens in ways that aren't necessarily violent. We can find lambs, we can find people who are suffering everywhere. So, the transfiguration that I want to tell you about happened a while back. You know, over the years, we've had different combinations of people go up to Heritage Heights. I love that it's Heights because it's a mountain. It's not really a mountain, it's a hill. But Heritage Heights, we go up there and sing and pray and be with people. So, one time, a while back, it was Rolf Vegdahl, our former musician, Becky Lerman, our former intern, and I went up to Heritage Heights to basically so Rolf could play guitar and sing, and I would be an appreciator of the music. So we walked in into the living room where we are, and there was just one person in there, and it was Effie Schultz. Effie, a member of this congregation. And she was up there. She had just gotten there, I think, a little while earlier. She was really disoriented. She was disoriented anyway with some dementia and all of that. And so we walked in. The three of us walk in. And there she sits. And, Effie, how you doing? How are you? And she says, oh, I'm fine. I'm a little confused. I don't know why I'm here. I'm in this place, but I think I'm kind of lost. And Rolf, we're sitting down around her, right? And I'm on one side of her, and Becky's on the other, and Rolf is right in front of her. He picks up his guitar, and he starts to play. And he starts to play, A Mighty Fortress Is Our God. he goes, "Oh, I know that one." Well, Effie knows all of them, but I recognize that one. And he plays along, and she says, "Oh." And then Bob stops playing for a minute, and he says, "Effie, can I tell you a story?" And Effie says, "Oh, I love a good story." And so Rolf says, "When I was around my mid-20s, 25, 26, I was traveling around, and I was just making my living busking on street corners and stuff, and I was making a lot of really bad decisions, drugs, alcohol, stuff." And Effie goes, "Oh, it's that age, isn't it?" And Rolf says, "Yeah, it was." And he said, "And I was just kind of, I was running because my dad was a Lutheran pastor, and I didn't want his form of religion, and I didn't want to claim his church either, and I didn't even want to claim his God. So I'm out there doing my thing, and one day I'm playing, and this guy who I'd never met before comes up and he pulls out his classical guitar and he starts playing A Mighty Fortress in Our Love." And Effie said, "Oh, that must have been something." And Rolf heard it. It made me realize, didn't have to claim my dad's religion, didn't have to claim my dad's God, but I can't not bring that music." And as he said, "Oh no, it's in the phone, isn't it?" And he said, "Yeah, it was my life." And he offered, and then he picks up his guitar again. He starts playing this lifeline. And in that is this beautiful sense, like Becky and I are looking at each other going, "I think we need to take our shoes off. This is holy ground. This is like transfiguration." The faces of both Rolf and Effie were totally changed. It was beautiful. And that just anchored her. And she knew where she was. She didn't know she was in Heritage Heights, but she knew where she was in front of God. This beautiful, beautiful anchoring. So the issue for us in this is, I think that there is always this place where the Spirit is moving to transfigure the lives of those around us. Us and them. Can we see it? Can we enter into it? Can we acknowledge that that's the kind of glory that Jesus is calling us to? It's so amazing to see the places where there is this incredible connection, where there is suffering, and yet in the suffering there is this realization. God is here, and God will not leave us alone. There will always be a life. And when we need a lifeline, there will be one. And oh, when someone needs a lifeline, we can be that lifeline. We will be that lifeline. Because we are being transfigured from glory to glory, as St. Paul says. We are being invited into this amazing, transfiguration into the image of God, God's self, that we are. What a stunning thing. And it begins when we see the shines, faces of those around us. It begins when we stop worrying about being over against anybody else. When we stop worrying about being strong or worthy before God. Thomas Merton says, God is calling me, the unworthy, to forget my unworthiness and that of all of my brothers, he was talking about the people in the monastery, and to dare to live in the love that is transforming us into the very image of God, and to laugh after all at all preposterous ideas of worthiness. To laugh at all preposterous ideas of our own power and glory. And to lean into being transfigured into the image of God. What will it be like when the people of God begin to totally get it in their bones that they are walking around as images of God? And that everyone we meet is also entering into the image of God. I heard someone say the other day that the best way to transform society is not the big, all the big laws and everything. It's for a small group of people to find a better way of living and to do it, to demonstrate it. And I think transfiguration, which calls us to see all of humanity as being in the image of God, is a great place to start. Jesus is, just like when he heals that boy, he hands him over to his father, right? I think that Jesus is doing that for us, healing us, calling us to this image that we were created in, and in that way, handing us back to the Father.